Welcome back.
Part two.
And part two for today, we're talking about questions of respect for tzitzis. It sort of flows naturally from what we were discussing earlier. To untie tzitzis from a garment may be a form of disrespect. I had been hoping to get to discussions about how to send tzitzis to the cleaners, if you're having non-Jewish cleaners, or if you're putting tzitzis into the washing machine. So are there any special precautions that you need to take in order to show the tzitzis proper respect? You wouldn't put your cufflinks into the washing machine, so maybe the tzitzis also shouldn't be put in. So that's another discussion. And in truth, this is a question that everyone has to deal with, right, on a daily basis. And there are also very special instance shilohs that deal with this question as well. One case is, it comes up very often, a person's folding their talis. How much caution does a person have to take that the tzitzis strings should not drag on the floor? Right, that would be a little bit of a bizarro, and a person's not going to drag their tie right on the floor, so perhaps one should take extra precautions, or perhaps because it's very often difficult, especially for those right who are wearing nice sized talisos, so to what extent does one have to take precautions to avoid that? If a person wants to use the talis in order to clean their glasses, so is that permissible or not? I actually had a shaila about this last night, that my 6-month-old son really likes to teethe on pretty much anything he can get his hands on, but there are certain things that he enjoys teething on more than others, and what I've discovered is that one of his favorite teething objects are my tzitzis. So if he is lying on the couch next to me, right, and I want to learn undisturbed, I know that if I give him a mega black, right, or a magnetile or whatever it is, it's not going to keep him occupied for that long. But if I give him my tzitzis, right, so then that will really keep him occupied for a long time. Am I allowed to do that? And I read a story a few days ago, somebody sent me, about a woman. She's writing this, you know, growing up during her year of after her father passed away, and she's recounting right, how growing up there was a big generation gap between her and her father, but one of the endearing moments, you know, that she used to share with him on a weekly basis was when she accompanied a shul for Shabbos, and she didn't know what was going on in the davening, but he showed her how to braid his tzitzis. And he just did the braiding, and then from then on, when she came to shul, she kept herself quiet and occupied by braiding his tzitzis. That was her entertainment, if you will, while she was keeping her father company in shul. So is that a disrespect to use the tzitzis to keep a child silent, quiet, happy, in shul as a bonding activity? Or perhaps that's a problem of showing disrespect for tzitzis. Special occasions as well, it comes up. We talk about using a talis as a burial shroud, so perhaps that's a little bit disrespectful. You're taking the talis, you're taking the 3 tzitzis that remain intact, and you're putting them, you're using them to wrap up a corpse. Couldn't that be potentially a problem of bizayon for the tzitzis? Right, this same woman in her story, she writes that when the Chevra Kadisha came, right, to be mitaher her father, so they explained to her that they're going to bury him in his talis. But then they cut off one of the sets of strings and they offered it to her. And she said, wow, that was just like the most sentimental thing for me, she says, because those were the tzitzis that I used to braid right, every Shabbos as a child. And she was so appreciative. And so she took it and she put it into her drawer. And whenever she feels wistful, so she'll take them out and recall all of those good memories. So why is that not a potential problem of bizayon? We'll see that it's not, but why is that not a potential problem of bizayon for the tzitzis? Person's walking, tzitzis are dragging on the floor. Again, it's a very similar question. You're folding the talis, you're walking. To what extent does one have to take precautions to avoid dragging the tzitzis on the floor? All of these and more are shilohs that come up about what are the limits, right, of respect for tzitzis, and when do we say that convenience or sentiment or something else is able to outweigh the obligation or the importance of showing respect for the tzitzis, and I hope to deal with that in the next 40 minutes or so that are available. I should point out that the methodology that we're going to employ, right, is primarily, because it's actually a rather large topic, so we're going to focus as much as possible right now on analyzing the primary sources. So we're not going to be reading so much the Shulchan Aruch and the Mishnah Brura, but we're going to be going back to the original Gemaras that inform all of the discussions of the poskim on this topic. I think I've actually assembled a nearly exhaustive list right, of Gemaras that inform this discussion, and hopefully, as we go through the Gemaras, we can summarize how those Gemaras inform different Piskei Halacha that the Poskim, that the Mefarshim of the Shulchan Aruch, and others offer on this topic. So the place to start off, many Poskim start off at this point, is the Gemara Menachos on Mem Gimel Amud Aleph, which we'll hopefully get to in another 2-3 weeks inside, and that Gemara tells us that Rabbi Yehuda used to put tzitzis onto his wife's clothing. He believed that women were obligated in tzitzis as well, even though we don't paskin like him, and he would make a bracha every morning of his ateif bat tzitzis. He would say it every morning. And the Gemara is troubled, why did he say the bracha every morning? Why didn't he say the bracha every time that he took the tzitzis off and put them back on? Such as, if he took a shower, so why didn't he say bracha putting the tzitzis on after he finished the shower? Or if he took the tzitzis off to use the restroom, so then why didn't he make a bracha when he put the tzitzis back on after using the restrooms? And the Gemara's answer basically was that Rabbi Yehuda wore his tzitzis the entire day. We're talking about a talis katan. He wore them the whole day. There was never a significant gap of time or lack of concentration, right, on those tzitzis, and therefore he only had the opportunity to make a bracha once, because he only put them on once. But if he took the tzitzis off, right, to take a shower, a long shower, he took the tzitzis off to go swimming, that's probably a better example. Someone who took tzitzis off to go swimming, or a person who took the tzitzis off in order to take a nap. So under those circumstances, if he had done that, he probably would have made a new bracha. And many poskim infer, right, from this case, that Rabbi Yehuda did not take his tzitzis off when he took a nap. Right, maybe he took naps during the day, but he napped with the tzitzis on. Right? Maybe he presumably used the restroom at some point during the day. He didn't take the tzitzis off when he went to use the restroom. Again, let's say we're talking now about the ancient equivalent of a talis katan. And from there they infer, right, that it's permissible to go into a restroom while wearing tzitzis, or while wearing at least a talis katan, that there's no prohibition against it. It's not even a bizayon, it's not even a failure to show respect for the tzitzis. The tzitzis are a garment, and one is allowed to wear them into a restroom. That's what we learn from this story of Rabbi Yehuda. The next case is a little bit more complex, and it tells us, it also appears in Menachos, and it says, when David HaMelech went into the bathhouse, when he went swimming, so he saw that he had no mitzvos at all. All the mitzvos that he usually had, back in the olden days, they wore tefillin the whole day long, but not while they were swimming. He had his Sefer Torah as a king. He had to have like a little Sefer Torah, right, on his arm all the time. Not while he was swimming. And he also wasn't wearing tzitzis, you know, when he was swimming. It's not a good idea to take tzitzis into the pool. And so, perhaps because it's an issue of derech eretz, perhaps just because it's very impractical, although I wonder whether that's a good line of business, someone could go into making a swimsuit tzitzis.
I've seen an ad for swimming. The guy in B'nai Brak is wearing his glasses, his suit, and his thing, and his hat.
And it's a tzitzis or not?
I guess.
Sure.
That's probably after he finished swimming, and just to show how. So David HaMelech, when he went to take a bath, when he went swimming, he saw that he had none of the mitzvahs that he usually had, and he was very distraught until he realized that he still had the mitzvah of Bris Milah, and so he was very thankful to God that he was never totally deprived of mitzvahs. So the question that Poskim talk about is, granted that he didn't have tzitzis when he was swimming, but what about when he was in the bathroom? So wasn't he missing tzitzis there? So once again, they infer that you're allowed to take tzitzis into a bathroom. What about while he was asleep? Right, why wasn't he worried when he went to bed? You can't wear tefillin at night, right? And you can't wear... Right, so what about, why didn't he go to sleep in his tzitzis? Or if he didn't go to sleep in his tzitzis, why wasn't he worried about the same problem? It shouldn't be when he's going swimming. It should also be every night when he goes to sleep. So that's a machlokas between the Rambam and the Rosh. Right? We didn't talk about it here, but we talked about it in the Friday shiur, that the Rambam says that there's no mitzvah to wear tzitzis at night, but the Rosh says if it's a daytime garment, there's a mitzvah to put tzitzis on it even when you're wearing it at night. And if it's a nighttime garment, there's no mitzvah to put tzitzis on it even when you're wearing it by day. So this question will split depending on whether you're a Rambam fan or a Rosh fan. Right? If you are a Rambam fan, so then you could argue that he didn't, well, again, there's no mitzvah. There's no mitzvah, but again, he's not going to be fulfilling the mitzvah. If you're a Rosh, right, so then he could potentially be wearing tzitzis and fulfilling the mitzvah at night. So those who follow the Rosh want to infer from this Gemara, right, again, from within the Rosh's worldview, that David HaMelech must have worn his tzitzis to bed. Right, and that's why, when he went to sleep, so he didn't feel that he was deprived of all the mitzvahs because he wore his tzitzis to bed. And now, people point out that it doesn't have to be his tzitzis that he wore to bed, even though he can't wear his tefillin to bed, because you're not allowed to wear tefillin at night, but his little Sefer Torah, right, maybe that's what he took to bed. Maybe the tzitzis he did not wear to bed, and the Sefer Torah, right, he did wear to bed. So there's interesting debates back and forth, but this Gemara is one that people use to point out that it's not considered it may not be disrespectful to tzitzis to take a nap in them. It happens very often Shabbos afternoon, person wants to take a nap. So is a person supposed to take his tzitzis off before going to sleep? Is he allowed to take a nap in tzitzis? And many poskim point to this Gemara as a source that it is permissible to take a nap in one's tzitzis. Yes. There's a source that I'm not quite remembering that may be relevant to that, so I don't want to answer right offhand. In general, the answer to this type of question will be that it's not a bona fide prohibition, but if it's something that wouldn't do for like a nice type of clothing, you don't want to use a tzitzis like a shmata. But I would want to look, because there may be a special exemption for certain types of clothing, that there may be a special exemption from tzitzis, like a turban, even if it's big enough, wouldn't need tzitzis. So I want to check whether there's a special exemption for clothing which are meant to absorb sweat and stuff like that. There may be a special exemption. I want to check that up again. But so maybe he slept in clothing, maybe he slept in pajamas, and a gartel too.
Well, in those days I get the impression that they slept with nothing else.
But maybe David HaMelech, because he was a king, and he had to sleep with the Sefer Torah, so maybe he had. Now there's a bigger question, right, which is what some posts can ask, and I do not want to get into this now, so I'm not going to take any questions on this, but once you brought it up, right, what about when he was with his wife? Right, so was he wearing tzitzis? Right, was he wearing tzitzis then? Right, so that's a question which poskim do raise, and there are actually those who say that since he felt that the only time that he had his tzitzis off was when he was swimming, maybe he was wearing tzitzis then. There's a big machlokas between Torah HaNigla, Torah HaNistar, about whether people should wear their tzitzis, you know, to bed or not. But again, this discussion and all of its little parts, it doesn't form that. I am not taking questions on that. So. Not on that.
No.
Okay.
I'm just going to say, my Boba said you don't put the tzitzis on a plain skin.
Yeah, it's probably informed by a very refined sensitivity to the way that we should react to mitzvos, right? And I think that's what we'll discover by the end of these sources, right? Is that many of the halachos that govern the respect that we're supposed to show to tzitzis are informed, right, by refinement and sensitivity more than, you know, the dry cut, you know, this is the law, this is what you must do, this is what you may not do. But because it's been customary, right, to treat the tzitzis with sensitivity, so there are many, many wonderful and meritorious things that Jews have abstained from doing with their tzitzis for many generations. But again, there's a line, there's a difference. It's not the same thing to talk about halakhically forbidden, right, and not supposed to be done because it's unrefined. So let's move onwards. Source number 3 tells us that there was a very, very wealthy man, a philanthropist in Jerusalem, whose name was Ben Tzitzis HaKeses. He was called the son, right, of Tzitzis and the blanket, Tzitzis and the carpet. And why was he called that, says the Gemara in Gittin? Because when he walked, his servants put down carpets in front of him, and the tzitzis, instead of having to drag on the ground, would drag on the carpets. And so it's clear, right, that if a person has a special tzitzis carpet, that there's no problem, it's not disrespectful for the tzitzis to drag on the tzitzis carpet. But the question is, what about all of those people in Jerusalem who are not as wealthy as Ben Tzitzis HaKeses? Can we infer that they wore the same type of tzitzis as Ben Tzitzis HaKeses, but they let their tzitzis drag on the ground as they walked because they couldn't afford all of those carpets? Or can we infer that no, that they wore a different style of tzitzis, a type of tzitzis where the strings did not reach the ground in order, because they didn't have that option of putting the strings on carpets? And so once again, you have a debate amongst the Mefarshim. There are those who say that we're able to infer from here that it's not necessarily problematic for the tzitzis to drag on the ground as one walks, because Ben Tzitzis HaKeses could afford to avoid that, and so good for him. But other people who couldn't, right, would just do what they had to do. And others say no, that it's not so difficult to just hitch the tzitzis up a little bit more so that it's not dragging on the ground. Now again, keeping in mind, in the olden days, that we're talking not about the tassels like we wear, but about a toga. So we're talking about a person whose garment, right, that's covering him, that's giving him privacy, that's giving him heat, right, is the garment with tzitzis on it. So it may not be so easy as you think it is, right, to just hitch the tzitzis up off the ground, because if the tzitzis strings need to be a certain length, and the garment, right, in order to provide you with the privacy and the dignity and the warmth that you need, right, needs to hang down to a certain length, then it's going to be very difficult to avoid having the tzitzis drag on the ground. And so one might argue that yes, that it's not so convincing to say that they hitched their tzitzis up, but by the same token, we can argue that nowadays, that pants fulfill the function that togas used to fulfill, so we, right, even if we're not as wealthy as Ben Tzitzis HaKeses, do have the option, right, of wearing our tzitzis higher, and therefore perhaps we should do that, even though in the olden days, for lack of a better option, they did need to have a drag on the ground. Yes?
Let's say if somebody had a toga like that, or if you take your tzitzis, you roll the tzitzis up and you roll them into the corner so they shouldn't hang down.
Right, so I used to have friends, right, in elementary school, and they had this whole system where they wrapped their tzitzis up like this, I think. It's something along these, you know, like this, and then they tucked it in. Right, so I think that there are some Hasidim, right, the Shari Tshuva writes this, that they tuck the tzitzis into their belt, meaning they like to have the talus that goes down, you know, really, really far, but in order to avoid having the tzitzis drag on the ground, they tuck the tzitzis into their gartel, and so it's a very interesting, you know, appearance. I think there are some people in this neighborhood who wear their talisos like that, and so that the Shari Tshuva mentions as being a preferable solution. In terms of sewing pockets for the tzitzis, if you go to the Sfarim store, you will find, or at least you used to be able to find, tzitzis where there actually is a little pocket on every corner, and that way, for those who wear the tzitzis not outside but inside, instead of having the tzitzis hang down next to their leg, which would be an even bigger problem than just having the bega, the strings themselves have more kedusha, just, you know, lying against the person's leg, so this way you could roll the tzitzis up and put it into the little pocket, and it would avoid having that problem. So that's definitely another solution that's been suggested to the problem of having the tzitzis, right, on bare skin. That would also seemingly be a solution for having the tzitzis drag on the ground as well. Now, why is it that the people's togas, they didn't have those type of pockets?
Because the Romans would have laughed.
Because the Romans would have laughed, and they didn't laugh at the tzitzis. Maybe they felt like the Sefer Mitzvah's katan, that there's a mitzvah of Uri'isem also, right, that you're supposed to be able to see them. Right? So they didn't want to roll them up and put them in a packet because then they would be invisible. That may be a solution, definitely. It may simply be that the style of clothing, the way that the clothing was manufactured, and the necessity of ensuring the clothing's longevity, right, might have precluded having such, you know, pockets on their everyday working clothing. Again, I'm not sure. So you can go back and forth in terms of how this happened, but it's definitely clear Ben Tzitzis HaKeses, his tzitzis would drag on the carpets. Other people's tzitzis may have dragged on the ground, and there's a slight chance that they may serve as precedent nowadays, if it couldn't be avoided, that there's no bona fide prohibition against having one's tzitzis drag on the ground. Now again, we're talking, let's say, it's most relevant to us when we're folding up the talus. So if a person can avoid, right, having the tzitzis strings drag on the ground, so then it's wonderful, they can avoid it. But if it cannot be avoided, and sometimes it is very difficult, you can't, like, you know, you'd have to get that jump, you know, in midair. So you're going to jump up in midair and then quickly, you know, fold off the tzitzis in order to be a couple of feet higher, right, while you're folding it. It's not always so easy. You don't have to buy a smaller talus just so that you can avoid having the tzitzis, you know, drag on the ground. If the tzitzis do drag on the ground, it's not the type of thing that you need to take absolute precautions. Although I believe I saw in one of these interesting books where somebody assembled all of the shilos that they got as text messages, and then they sent back all of the tshuvos that they sent as text messages, and they had some sort of a very cute title for that as well. You know, I forget exactly, you know, what it was. And so in this book of text message shilos to tshuvos, so one of the shilos was, how much care should I take to avoid having the tzitzis strings drag on the ground as I fold it up? And this rabbi from Eretz Yisrael, I believe that he's a Rosh Yeshiva, a very prominent Rosh Yeshiva in the Dati Lumi world. So he wrote that you should take as much caution as you can when folding the tzitzis to avoid having the strings drag on the floor. And so I believe that that's sort of like coming from both directions. It's definitely true that one should take cautions. Ben Tzitzis HaKeses could afford it, and so he did it. And if we could afford, if it'll take a couple of extra seconds, it may be worth those couple of extra seconds, right? But if one's unable to do that, so then it's not necessarily the end of the world. The post can point out that presumably the other citizens of Yerushalayim used to let their tzitzis drag on the ground without concern. Yes? Next Gemara. So let's take a look at the next Gemara. The Gemara says that Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Yonasan, and they were going in a graveyard. They were Havushaklu Vazli Beves HaKvaros. They were in a graveyard. And Havakashadya Tchelta de Rabbi Yonasan. Rabbi Yonasan's Tcheles was dragging down. And Rabbi Chiya said, Dalye, lift it up. Kedei Shelo Yomru, that people shouldn't say, Lemachar Ba'yin Etzlenu, tomorrow they'll be with us, Ve'achshav Mecharfin Osanu, and now they're embarrassing us. Now the Shulchan Aruch already points out that it's clear from the Mefarshim that in this case the tzitzis were literally dragging on the gravestones. They were dragging on the graves. And it's also clear that Rabbi Chiya only said, he didn't say you need to tuck the tzitzis into your clothing. He just said don't have the tzitzis tickle the graves. Right? That's the only problem, you know. But if the tzitzis are a little bit higher, the fact that they're out does not make a difference. That was back then when everybody used to wear tzitzis because you had a toga and your toga had tzitzis. The Shulchan Aruch says that in later generations, when not everybody wore tzitzis, this concern became more exaggerated, and that's why we don't even wear tzitzis outside at all, because it's not just the concern of tickling the grave, right, with the tzitzis. The concern is that it just even just having it in the environs, visible in the environs of the cemetery, might already pose a problem of oeg l'rosh. Again, this Gemara, so in terms of the respect for tzitzis, not the respect for the deceased, so people bring two different interpretations of this Gemara. You could say that that the graves were at ground level, and that when the tzitzis were dragging on the graves, it meant that when it was on top of a grave, it dragged on the grave, and when it's on the ground between the graves, it dragged on the ground between the graves. And in which case it would be another raya that it's okay while walking for tzitzis to drag on the ground. On the other hand, there are those who say, and this depends on historical questions, that the gravestones in the olden days were elevated, very similar to the gravestones nowadays. And when we talk about the tzitzis tickling the gravestones, we meant that they weren't dragging on the ground in between the graves, but because the graves were elevated higher than ground level, that's why the tzitzis tickled the graves. But if, you know, in between, they were not dragging on the ground. And so once again, you've got both perspectives on how to interpret this Gemara. Either it is a proof that the people were not careful in the olden days about dragging their tzitzit strings on the ground, right? Or that people perhaps, you know, could have been careful, but, you know, to have it drag on an elevated structure, right, that's attached to the ground, the tzitzit to drag on a fire hydrant or a mailbox, right, or the hood of somebody's car, that definitely would not be a problem. And the only problem would literally be to have them dragging on the ground. Now the fifth source, again, and I think this is going to be second to last source. No, not the second to last. We'll have a couple more sources that are permissible, and then we'll get to all of the sources that that begin to hem in the scope of what's permissible and move us towards being machmir. But we're still working with the sources which inform the lenient positions. And the next source is the Mishnah Maseches Megillah, and that is Tashmishi Mitzvah Nizrakin. Anything which is halachically classified as a Tashmish Shal Mitzvah, it's not something which is imbued with actual holiness, right, but rather is simply an object that one uses to perform a mitzvah. You're allowed to be Zorek them, right? Literally, Zorek means to throw, right? In this case, it means to throw it out. In the garbage, precisely. And what are Tashmishi Mitzvah, says the Mishnah? Elohim Tashmishi Mitzvah, Sukkah, Lulav, Shofar, and Tzitzis. So Tzitzis, the Mishnah says, are allowed to be thrown into the garbage. That is the basic, the bare bones halacha, that if a person, right, if a person, for whatever reason, right, doesn't want to treat the Tzitzis more respectfully, is he in violation of halacha? If he takes a pair of Tzitzis, strings and all, throws them in the garbage, the answer is no. It's not a violation of, you know, usser versus mutter. It may not be a display of absolute refinement, but it's not a violation, right, of halachic norm.
Don't we put it into another bag?
That's what we do now, but it's not...
Again, it's the sensitivity that we have to, you know, we treasure mitzvos, and we show that by treating mitzvah objects with respect. But in terms of the bona fide halacha, right, if a person did that, they will not have violated halacha, right? And if a person was faced with extenuating circumstances, I can't imagine why, right, a command, maybe back in the times when there was persecution, right, and you needed to dispose of things very quickly so that you couldn't be easily identified, right, as as a Jew, so then it might be permissible to dispose of it without taking, I mean, it is permissible to dispose of it without taking any extra precautions. So that's Tashmishi Mitzvah Nizrakin. Now we'll come back in a couple of moments, but actually we'll do it right now. If you look at source number 9 at the bottom of the first column, so you'll discover there's something very interesting that we learn about a shofar. Keep in mind, the shofar is listed right before tzitzis on the list of Tashmishi Mitzvah. You can throw out a shofar the same way that you can throw out tzitzis, but source number 9 tells us that Abishol says, Mayim or Yayin, and if you wanted to use a shofar to drink, right, you wanted to use it as a cup, so you're allowed to put water into the shofar, and you're allowed to put wine into the shofar. Those are mutar, and the reason is kedei letzachzecho, because the wine and the water, they sort of smooth out, they clean out the shofar, and therefore it's considered to be good for the shofar to be cleansed by holding these liquids. But meiraglayim, to put meiraglayim urine into the shofar, so that would be usur. It's a bona fide halachic prohibition against, right, putting that, let's say, in the doctor's office, and they don't have those little plastic disposable cups, so you wanted to use a shofar, that would be forbidden. It's against halacha, because mipnei hakavod, it's failure to display proper respect to the shofar to use it for meiraglayim. So it seems that even though it's only Tashmishi Mitzvah, right, and you're allowed to put it into the garbage, but at the same time, right, there are limits. The kavod imposes a genuine halachic obligation, and even if throwing in the garbage is not considered to be the greatest, you know, disrespect, but if you go a little bit beyond that, so it would be a great disrespect. Now that leads to another historical question. What type of objects used to be found in people's garbage pails? Right? We know that even now, nowadays. I think I read an article a few years ago that actually that some researchers performed a study where they went to lots of different countries and lots of different states, and they took a survey by digging up landfills and going around with the sanitation workers of what exactly were people throwing out in their garbage. And they discovered that there was actually a wide variety amongst different places of what actually was in the garbage. So for instance, if you go to Europe, especially let's say Switzerland, where the government charges like a couple of dollars tax on every garbage bag that you purchase because they want people to be as environmentally conscious as possible. So you'll discover, I think, that the garbages are generally different. They have different components, different things inside of them than we have in America, which is a very disposable society. And so one might argue, and again, I don't know the historical data, that in the olden days, a garbage pail was a more respectful place than it is nowadays. Now, again, it could be that it's totally wrong. It could be that in the olden days, it was even worse because things decomposed and they didn't take out the trash, every day. So again, the details I don't know, but it's definitely definitely clear that any... nowadays we have that also. The baby diapers, my garbage every day has baby diapers in it. So, Baruch Hashem. We have all sorts of interesting shilohs about, yes.
You think it, even tziporen would be much better of the ktoret if you wash it in meraglaim.
Oh, meraglaim yafilar elo she'in machnisin meraglaim b'mikdash. Now I'll tell you what I think that the answer is going to be. That let's say that we're talking about a place where there's a shortage of potable liquids, right? But the shofar is dirty, right? And it's even blacked up, and you need to do something to sort of clean it out. Right, so we say mayim and yayin are mutar kedei letzachzecho because it somehow helps the shofar function properly. What if you don't have water or wine that you can spare? So maybe you'll think, let me use a non-potable liquid in order to fulfill this function. And the Gemara says, even though it'll be mitzachzeach the shofar, it still is asur because it's not kavod. That's what I think is why a person would think of doing that. Not like the doctor's office example. A more realistic example, right, would be that case where he's doing it in order to clean out the shofar and in order to remove some sort of a blockage or stuffing and make the sound come out more smoothly and more clearly. Okay, there you go. Yayin. You can put yayin into the shofar. So it's definitely clear that there's a limit, right? That just because it's not the tashmishi kedusha, just because it's merely a mitzvah object and it can be thrown out, doesn't mean that you have a license to do whatever you want with a shofar. There are certain things that we cannot do with a shofar, mipnei akavod, and presumably the same is true for tzitzis. There are certain things that may not be done, right, with tzitzis, mipnei akavod, but we'll need to, right, so far only all we've encountered, right, is things that one is allowed to do. So let's finish the list of things that one is allowed to do, and then we'll move on and see some of the things that we're not allowed to do. So moving on to source number 6. So source number 6 talks about putting tzitzis as shrouds, as burial shrouds. And it's a very interesting discussion. I wish we had more time to look at it more clearly, but basically the Ramban quotes from the Masechtos Ketanos, from the outside Braisos, and the Maseches called Maseches Tzitzis. And that tells us, says the Ramban, Matzinu b'braisa b'masechet tzitzis, source number 6, that's from the 7 Masechtos HaKetanos, and Tanya Hasam, we learn there, Ein Matirin Tzitzis Alameis, the Tanakhama says that you leave all of the tzitzis intact on the talus of a niftar. Now, Bashal ben Batnis is Matir. Bashal says that you do untie the tzitzis from that talus. And Abashal said, Amar li Abba, my tati told me, Kishe Amus, when I die, hater li tzitzis, you should untie my tzitzis, lefi sheyeshba mishum kedusha, because the tzitzis are possessed with kedusha. In other words, Abashal held that tzitzis are not merely tashmishe mitzvah, but rather they are tashmishe kedusha like tefillin, and therefore they may not be used as burial shrouds. You wouldn't put tefillin right on a corpse. So the chachamim say ein ba mishum kedusha. There is no kedusha in the tzitzis. They're merely tashmishe mitzvah, and therefore ela osin osa tachlich lemeis. You can use them as a shroud. And the next line is very significant. And you can also make the tzitzis to mardaas lichamor. So we don't necessarily know what a mardas is, although we can guess. What's a chamor? A donkey. So what are you going to make for a donkey? A saddle. So you can make the tzitzis, right, into a donkey saddle, and the Ramban says, Zoyach Yitzon Azo, this is the Braisa in Masachet Tzitzis. So the Chachamim, whom we paskin like, we say that Tzitzis are Tashmishe Mitzvah, they say that you're allowed to make the Tzitzis into a donkey saddle. So the Ramban is troubled, skipping the middle part and going to the after the second ellipsis. The Ramban says, Ikasha, if you're troubled, Le'Rabbanon, Eich Osir Oso Mardas Lechamar, how can you turn the Tzitzis into a saddle? That Ha'ikam Yishun Bizoy Mitzvah, isn't this a bizayon? Isn't this a disgrace? It's shameful. It's embarrassing. This is a mitzvah object. Just like we say, you can't, well, what do we paskin? We paskin that you could untie from one beged, right, to another beged, but in some contexts, perhaps you can't untie it and just leave it in your drawer. Right? That would be bizayon of the mitzvah, says Ramban. And so isn't it a bizayon to turn the tzitzis into a saddle? And the Ramban answers, Abad Kulu Dam, we'll get to that in a second. And he says, Lo Kasham, it's not a problem. Why not? Because Hahi Bisharotzabo Ubimitzvaso. The only time that you need to show respect for the tzitzis is when these tzitzis are still going to be used for fulfilling the mitzvah. But you're going to untie some from this garment and put them onto another garment. It means you're disassembling the mitzvah object, and that is a little bit of a bizayon to have it disassembled, even if only for a short amount of time. But over here, now that a person is ready to take the talis out of commission, right? It's already like a Navol Tibol, it's already below, it's already worn out. So therefore, Havale Kisukkah La'achar Shiva, it's just like the walls of a sukkah after sukkah is over, the Nizrak, that you can throw it out, Kedekai Malon, Bechol Tashmishe Mitzvah. So this Ramban, right, in addition to giving us another example of when it's permissible, makes a very important distinction. He says that all of the Heterim, right, in terms of how to dispose, right, of mitzvah objects, only apply when those mitzvah objects are no longer capable or obligated to be used for fulfillment of the mitzvah. But as long as a mitzvah object is in its prime, as long as it still can or must be used for fulfillment of the mitzvah, so then the standards will be much higher. So that might explain why a shofar cannot be used, right, for holding, right, meraglayim, because a shofar, right, well, if you're not using it this year, you'll use it next year, right, and you'll use it the year afterwards. A shofar's mitzvah is a mitzvah to me this. And therefore, it's constantly, right, in its state of being usable, right, for the mitzvah, and unless, I guess, it's like really worn out or split or something like that, such that it's no longer suitable, so then perhaps you would relax the standards and be matir even things that wouldn't be mutter otherwise. So the same thing is true for tzitzis. As long as the tzitzis are still usable, right, for the mitzvah, the standards of respect will be relatively high. But once they cease to be usable for the mitzvah, so then, and that may depend on what the person's personal, you know, standards are. Maybe he insists on only wearing a talis mehudar, and so when it already begins to turn a little bit yellow, he'll dispose of it and get a new one. At that point already, so then we'll say nizrak, and you can even throw it in the garbage because it's no longer a mitzvah object. You no longer view it as fit to use for the mitzvah. So that's the Ramban. We have here another source number 7. It's talking about an esrog, and the relevance to tzitzis can be debated. But it says the Rabbi Chanina matpil ba vinafik ba. He would dip his esrog into whatever your favorite dip is, into, you know, pesto or tchina or whatever it is. He would dip it, betovel it, and then he presumably would take a bite, right? And then he would use it. He would shake it around, right, together with the other three species on Sukkos. And so the post can point out that Rabbi Chanina's practice definitely seemed to be, this is a mitzvah, an esrog, it's a mitzvah object, but nonetheless he didn't feel that taking a bite out of it was too much of a disrespect. He felt that it was still sufficiently respectful, right, to the esrog, even though he was using it as breakfast. So that's another example where we have, pushing the envelope of what liberties are allowed to be taken with mitzvah objects. And then finally, and that basically brings to a close, right, the list of sources that say what you're allowed to do with mitzvah objects. Now we have to open up the list of sources that talk about what can't be done with mitzvah objects. So the opening of this one is source number 8, and it tells us V'shafach b'chisa, we're talking about the mitzvah of kisui hadam, when a person shechts certain types of animals, so the blood that comes out of the animal's neck after shechita has to be covered with dust. Talk a different time about all the different reasons for that. Is it an avodah zarah issue? Is it a tzabah? Whatever the issue might be, you gotta cover the blood with dust. And says the Gemara that the reason that we compare the shefichas hadam, right, the act of shechita, which leads to the blood coming out, and the act of kisui, is to tell you one of the things it teaches you is b'masha shafach, the part of his body that he used, right, to spill the blood, to the shechita, bo yichaseh, that same body part should be used for kisui adam. Shaloh, that teaches you shaloh yichasenu baregel, you shouldn't just kick the dust over the blood with your foot, and the reason for that is shaloh yihiyu mitzvos bezuyos alav, the mitzvah should not be something that a person treats with disrespect or with contempt. And so this becomes the source, the paradigm, for many, many other halachos, not just when it comes to the mitzvah of kisui adam, but when it comes to many other mitzvahs as well, that a person is not allowed to act in a manner which could be viewed or which could diminish the respect that they have for the mitzvah. So let's take a look for a second at, for instance, source number 11. The source number 11 asks the following question. Ba'u minei, nei Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. The following question was posed to Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. Ma'u lihistapek minoye sukkah kol shiva. Is a person allowed, let's say that he hangs real fruits, edible fruits, from his sukkah in order to decorate it? Is he allowed to eat his sukkah decorations for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, or for a snack in between? Are you allowed to be mistapek? Are you allowed to be maspikot at atzmicha? You're allowed to satisfy yourself, satisfy your appetite with sukkah decorations. And his answer was, he said, didn't they say, asur la'atzot ma'ot k'neged ner Chanukah? You're not allowed to use the light of the Chanukah menorah for counting out coins, for making sure that you have precise change, because that would be using the Chanukah menorah for some mundane purpose, and it would diminish the respect, the uniqueness, the specialness, right, of the mitzvah, if you treat the mitzvah light as simply a utilitarian object that you're using, like a kardom lachpor bo, right, or an atara l'eskadol bo. You're using something which is a special mitzvah object, which should be uniquely designated for the mitzvah. It's a little bit disrespectful to use it just for some mundane purpose. So he wanted to say that just like you can't use the Chanukah light to count out your change, you also cannot use the sukkah decorations to satisfy your appetite. So then the Gemara says, okay, which one has a source, which one doesn't have a source? Skipping to the last line, Ella Omar Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef says that the source for both the Chanukah lights and for the sukkah decorations, avuain tekulu dam, that the father, if you wish, right, the heading, the main category of all of these is kisui adam. Kisui adam is a pasuk, v'shafach v'chisa. Don't just cover the blood with your foot as if it was something disgraceful, as if it's something that you do as an afterthought without investing proper care in it. Just like you're supposed to cover the blood with your hand to fulfill the mitzvah with your hand, you're supposed to treat sukkah decorations and Chanukah candles with proper respect as well. Now, there are some poskim who said you could have differentiated. You could talk about the difference between the act of performing a mitzvah and the object with which the mitzvah is performed. So you could argue that the act needs to be done with proper care, with proper attention, with proper respect. But once the act is performed, right, once that you're sitting in the sukkah, needs to be done respectfully, right? But the decoration itself is just an object. Why can't you eat it? The Chanukah candles must be lit with respect. But once they're lit, why can't you simply use them to count out your change? And the Gemara seems to indicate that that we don't differentiate, that the object represents the mitzvah as much as the action does, and a symbol of the mitzvah, the ambassador of the mitzvah, if you will, even if the mitzvah is the action, but the object symbolizes the mitzvah, and the symbol of the mitzvah should be treated with as much respect, right, as the mitzvah act itself is supposed to be treated with. If you turn, let's say, to source number 10, going a little bit upwards on the column, so the Gemara tells us that the Kohen has special clothing for doing the Trumas Hadesh and for taking out the charred cinders from the previous day's Karbanos, and those are not the same clothing that he wore when he actually was bringing the new day's Karbanos. And the Gemara says it teaches you Derech Eretz, Medcha Torah Derech Eretz, that Begadim Shabisha Bahen Kedeir El Rabo, when you're serving as a cook, right, you don't use the same clothing as you use when you're a waiter, right? The cook's clothing is probably going to get a little bit stained, etc. And then when you go out to actually serve, right, the customers, you put on nicer clothing. That's Derech Eretz. The Kohen, when he's doing his, his taking out the trash, is going to be wearing one set of clothing, and he changes into a new set of clothing, a fresh set of clothing, when he comes to actually do the Avodah, because that would not be Derech Eretz. And so once again, some posts can point out that the same thing can be applied, right, to tzitzis as well. If we have this idea, right, that when you're fulfilling the mitzvah of tzitzis, you don't necessarily want to be wearing, right, the same clothing that you were wearing when you were doing certain other things. And so there is an idea, Derech Eretz, it may not be, you know, the letter of the law, Aser versus Mutter, right, but if a person is sensitive, right, to Derech Eretz, so there are certain things that they're not going to do with their tzitzis. There are certain, you know, if he's fulfilling a mitzvah, this is clothing that's being used to fulfill a mitzvah, it should not have been used previously for other things which are a little bit messy, etc. Source number 12, right, it talks about hadas shal mitzvah asur la riach bo. You're not allowed to smell the adasim when you're fulfilling the mitzvah with them. Esrog shal mitzvah though mutar la riach bo. And in the context with the connection with this, the Gemara invokes the concept of muktza. It says that sometimes a mitzvah object can be muktza. We know that on muktza, right, muktza, usually people think that it means you can't touch it at all. You can always touch muktza objects. The Isser is moving them, right? And even moving them, we know that if it's a kli shemalachto, right, the Isser, you're allowed to move them letzorech gufo and letzorech mikolo. So let's say that a person, right, this is a bit of a radical example, but they always, you know, they're accustomed to following the place in their Gemara, right, with a pen, right, they got a nice pen, and it's comfortable, and makes it easy to find the place. So is there any problem on Shabbos with using that pen to find that tzorech gufo, right? So there are certain things that you're allowed to use muktza objects for, and the same thing is true with mitzvah objects, but they say that the same way that there's muktzah on Shabbos, there's muktzah with mitzvah objects. And so you might view the tzitzis, right, or, you know, this is a bit of a radical assumption, and poskim generally reject the potential for this. Well, the why is a question, but they do talk about the tzitzis being muktzah, right, for their mitzvah, and therefore you may be allowed to use them for some things, right, but not for everything, right, just like objects which are on Shabbos, which are, klisha malachto le'isser, a pen, it's mostly used for writing, so there are many things that you cannot use it for, and the only couple of things that you're allowed to move it for the sake of. So we're not going to have a chance to finish all of this, but the basic klal, right, that emerges is the following. Right, number one, that it's very important, right, if not because of halacha, but at least because of a sense of refinement and sensitivity, to treat all mitzvah objects, including tzitzis, with a high level of respect. On the other hand, right, there are instances and many sources which indicate that there are things that can be done which are mildly disrespectful with mitzvah objects. So how does one balance between these two sets of sources? So one question that one always must ask is, on the scale of respect and disrespect, where does this stand? So you can talk about having tzitzis, you know, drag on carpets, and tzitzis drag on gravestones, and tzitzis drag just on the floor, and those are, right, tzitzis touching your skin, exactly. You can talk about a shofar for Meir Aglaim, you can talk about putting a shofar in the garbage. There may be differences between the two of them, and there may even be differences depending, right, on what else is in the garbage and on how you wrap the shofar before you put it into the garbage. So one difference is, exactly, how do you assess the level of disrespect? The second difference that Ramban suggested was a difference between a mitzvah object which is still in use and a mitzvah object which is already out of commission. While the object is still in use, it represents the mitzvah to a greater extent, and therefore it needs more respect. Once the object is out of use already, so then perhaps it ceases to represent the mitzvah with that same degree, and that's how the Ramban explained that you're allowed to make a a talis, which is no longer in use, into a saddle for a donkey, because the talis is no longer in use. It's not as associated anymore, right, with the mitzvah. There are two other distinctions, which I'll just mention very, very briefly, because otherwise we're not going to have any closure at all. The third distinction is, to what extent is an object a mitzvah object, and to what extent is it utilitarian? So the Taz draws a distinction between talisos in the olden days, which were primarily togas and only secondarily mitzvah objects, as opposed to talisos nowadays, or at least talis gadols nowadays, which are unique, right, for davening and for fulfilling the mitzvah of tzitzis. The Taz says that even though there may have been certain leniencies back then, when the primary identity of the tzitzis was as a garment and only secondarily as a means for fulfilling the mitzvah, so you may be able to take certain liberties because an ancient toga didn't represent the mitzvah of tzitzis, that wasn't its main function. But a talis nowadays, which does represent the mitzvah of tzitzis, says the Taz, we would have to take many more precautions, and that's why the Taz says that one should not wear a talis gadol into the bathroom. People never do that, they always take it off first, because the talis gadol represents the mitzvah much more to us than it would have to people many centuries ago. It would potentially mean that these heterim potentially don't apply to us, but the postgame seem to assume that the dragging on the floor, especially if it's only, you know, when you're folding it and stuff like that, is not like the greatest of disrespects, and therefore it can be excused, especially in light of the fact that it does seem that for centuries people were not as careful about that. So you have those three major distinctions, which are all very important, and I apologize that we were so rushed today, but